I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Pocket Limp Podcast. I'm Rick Henson. I'm your host for this 150th episode of our weekly tech talk. Later in the show, I'll be inviting Pocket Limp contributing editor Max Freeman-Mills to preview Switch Sports for Nintendo's multifunctional games console, after he visited the Japanese gaming giant's UKHQ to go hands-on ahead of a full launch. I'll also be talking with Stuart Tickle of AWE Europe about home cinema installations and the perpetual rise of the average home screen size. But first, Sky surprised us all this week with the announcement that it will offer its Sky Stream Puck as a standalone product to all, not just Sky Glass customers. That effectively means you'll be able to get Sky TV without needing a satellite dish or the firm's all-in-one television option. Our deputy editor Britta O'Boyle joins me now to discuss the news. So Brit, what actually happened?
So it looks like Sky has announced the Sky Puck, but rather than it working just with the Sky Glass TV, you can actually use it independently, which is pretty exciting. It means you don't need the TV to get Sky over broadband.
Which is hugely exciting. And in my opinion, something I expected them to launch alongside Sky Glass, or even instead of Sky Glass, when we went to that massive launch event earlier this year.
Yeah, so it's definitely exciting. Who do you think's gonna this is gonna appeal to though? Because it's quite an interesting sort of idea, right? If you can get it without the Sky Q box or without the TV, it's a much cheaper way of doing it. Certainly, nothing else.
Yeah, I think it's something that Sky has been looking at and should have been looking at for many years, in the fact that its user base is limited to those that can have a satellite dish on the roof. It tries to serve those with Now TV, or Now, as it's now called. but that in itself has a strange makeup that's more like a sort of almost conventional streaming service. Sky, anyone who hasn't seen Sky Glass or doesn't know much about Sky Glass essentially offers the Sky TV experience, but with a different kind of front end that is best suited to streaming and to the internet rather than linear live TV. So what it does is you start up your TV and immediately it gives you a home screen rather than takes you through into a TV programming, so and gives you loads and loads of content ideas of things to watch. It doesn't have recordings, unlike Sky Q, but it does have a playlist, so you can just tag anything you want to watch or anything that's coming up in the future on the, because it does still have an EPG. And what it will do is it will tag that into your playlist bar and therefore give you access to the on-demand version of that show when available. So it's almost like recording, but you can't. The biggest side effect to that is you can't keep it beyond the streaming service or the provider's deadline. Like for example, if I recorded something last Christmas on my Sky Hugo Box, I could watch it today. However, on the Sky Glass TV, you can't do that. Now the Sky Stream Puck is essentially Sky Glass TV without the TV. So it is a small set-top box that looks like a puck, a hockey puck. It's not round. I don't know why they call it that, actually. Anyway, but it's tiny, smaller than the actual remote that comes with it. And you just set that up like a set-top box and away you go. And you can put it on your own TV. It's 4K, it's HDR, and it's got Dolby Atmos. So it's a pretty decent little piece of kit, and you will get a full Sky TV option. Now, the question, of course, you gave me, Brit, was who will it appeal to? And it will appeal to most those who don't have a satellite on their roof. For whatever reason, you might not be able to. You might be living in a protected building, and therefore you're not allowed to have Sky normally. This allows you then to have the full Sky TV.
Have they announced pricing for it yet? Because I know they've not said when it's going to be available, have they? They've just said later this year. So do we know roughly how much you think it might cost? What do you think?
At present, no. And to be honest, I can't remember how much Sky Glass costs on a monthly basis neither at the moment. But I would imagine it'd be cheaper.
Well, Sky Glass is split, isn't it? So you pay for the TV separately for the entertainment. So presumably it would be, again, with the Sky Stream Puck,
yeah,
you would presumably pay for the Sky package as your main, like, cost, I suppose, during the month. And then you obviously, either you pay for the thing itself in one go, or you pay for it over however many months. But I'd imagine it would be included. Or I'd imagine you pay for it as a one-off and then you do the entertainment package or sports package or whatever separately. So it surely must be a much cheaper way to get it over Sky Q, certainly. And if you don't have the TV, then you don't have that ongoing cost as well, which is great.
Yeah, my guess is that it will cost exactly the same. The subscription will cost exactly the same as it does on Sky Glass.
Yeah, agreed.
But the actual, and the puck will either be free, like you suggest, or it'll be so negligibly cheap that you'll either spread that cost over the first 5 months, or it'll be, it'll be an extra 50p per month for the duration of the contract. Because Sky does actually have a history of this. Now, for listeners who don't know, Sky also has a major stake in Roku, the streaming device company. And Roku previously made streaming devices for its Now TV service, and those devices were extraordinarily cheap in comparison to others on the market, because the kickback for Sky was that you would be paying for the Now service, because they sort of, like, although they did a few other things, they were mainly set up just for that. So I can see the same in this case. The other people that it will really appeal to are people that don't want to upgrade their TV or want to upgrade to a better TV than Sky Glass, because Sky Glass is around mid-range in terms of the quality, I would say. Whereas, say, for example, you want to buy an OLED TV, you're not going to buy a Sky Glass.
No.
But you could, therefore, have the Sky Stream Puck connected to your OLED TV, because it is 4K HDR, and you will still be getting Dolby Atmos out if, say, for example, you have a Sonos Arc soundbar.
Yeah, makes sense.
I can't actually see anything bad about it.
No, me neither. When they initially launched Sky Glass, they said the Sky Stream Puck was £50 each. Now, whether they'll change that or not, I guess we'll find out in a few months' time when they decide. But that would suggest that you would pay for that up front, I would say, and then you would then pay for the subscriptions separately. But the subscriptions, based on what we've seen, they're quite reasonable, really, compared to what you pay for Sky Q, certainly. So it's definitely.
So my last question is actually to you, Britt, is would you consider Sky Stream Puck over Sky Q?
Yes, I think I would, mainly because of hopefully the price reduction, but also because you can have less under your TV, less boxes and stuff, especially if this thing's tiny compared to what a Sky Q box is. And I like things to be nice and neat and tidy. So yes, I would, I think. What about you?
Excellent.
Would you?
And on a second TV.
He's like, no, he wouldn't.
No, I definitely, to be honest, the Sky Q mini boxes are really rubbish. And, you know, that's for balance.
Yeah.
Mine crashes constantly. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Sky Stream Puck does in comparison. Mm-hmm. So if I could replace a Sky Q mini box with a Sky Stream Puck, that would be something I'd be interested in.
Yeah, that makes sense. Fair.
Coming up in a bit, Max Freeman-Mills tells us about his hands-on experience with Nintendo's new Switch Sports. Will it see the return of motion gaming as a big deal?
There's nothing quite like standing next to someone and, you know, trying to beat them while flailing your hands at a tennis match, or you know, trying to gently release a bowling ball in a sports game from this series.
Now, though, let's turn our attention to home cinema technology, as I recently spoke with Stuart Tickle, the managing director of distributor AWE Europe, who explained to me how his company supplies and trains custom installers and retailers. We chatted about home cinema experiences in general and how the industry is thriving in the era of ever-increasing TV screen sizes. I started by asking him to explain AWE's role in the home theatre business.
We are a specialist distribution company, and we work specifically into the sort of smart home and home cinema type markets, which is covering independent integrators who are kind of like digital plumbers, people that go around people's homes but actually do all the entertainment and integration side. But we also work with some retailers as well.
And is that moving really well at the moment? I mean, we've seen certainly with the pandemic over the last couple of years that the entertainment business has thrived because people have been stuck at home. Are people looking towards more expansive setups and, say, for example, larger installations now than they were, say, beforehand?
Without a doubt. I mean, we've been on quite a strong growth path probably for the last sort of 15, 20 years, to be frank, in this side of things. But where that was very much the emergence of the custom install market, which tended to be known as being higher end installation. So installers going to people's homes with plenty of disposable income or more, and fulfilling their dreams and desires from an entertainment control and home cinema side of things. It's over the last probably 5 years, but pandemic certainly helped further increase people's perception of the value of their home. And we have seen further growth sort of being brought forward as a result of that.
Traditionally, when people consider a home cinema, they've thought of a special room in the house that is kitted out specifically just to watch movies and TV shows or even play games nowadays. But do you see an uptrend in people now wanting a more sort of like generic living room space turned into that kind of entertainment centre?
Yes, without a doubt. And part of that is because what you can do now with the technology at the price points you can get it is far greater. So again, going back a decade or so, to get what you would call a home cinema, just by nature of the level, the expense of the individual components, to get a very strong performance that you could equate to a cinema rather than a soundbar or just a home hi-fi system, you had to spend so much. It warranted a more dedicated space, big projection screen on the wall. You're probably hiding speakers. So at that point, you're building frames within rooms to hide stuff and fabric it out. So the whole cost time process was quite extensive. Now you have so many more options about how you get to a set level of performance. And the key is actually now not so much whether it's a separate room or the same room, it's utilizing, it's extracting the best performance from the budget you have effectively. And that can be done in a number of ways.
We've seen statistics saying that the average home screen size for a television now is around 55 inches, maybe slightly higher, between 55 and 65. Has that actually helped home cinema custom installers, or are they sort of like a little worried that the TV market is growing so much that projector use might be diminishing?
Average screen size we would call for what we supply, so TV wise we're supplying custom installers rather than retailers, and 55 would be considered a small screen. So 65 would be a default in a living room, 75 if you've got someone that's interested more in movies, gaming, and of course with sport and Netflix and Prime and all the other streaming services, big screens are now a really important part of people's entertainment. And you mentioned the pandemic, it's their get out, it's their getaway, it's their escape. So whether it's sport, gaming, movies, big screens are definitely on the up. we are selling 65, 75, 85s routinely. We sell 100-inch screens monthly. Of course, that's at the higher end. But it's not diminishing projection. Projection, certainly all our experience, and including dealing with the sort of major independent retailers like Richard Sands and Sevenoaks, who are addressing a fairly mainstream market, it's certainly on the increase. So I just think that overall, I think the content driven, there's so much more content you can get aside from the pandemic where people were locked in and couldn't go out. You know, there's so much content, be it sport series to watch. And that's before you talk about gaming and all this other stuff that's growing massively.
The other thing I was going to ask is, do you think that the fact that 4K HDR projection is becoming a lot cheaper is a major driver of that?
The years in the past where a projector that people could afford was what people relate to the experience you get in your average pub is long gone. So it used to be that when you said, I've got a projector, what people actually had is some form of data projector or office projector that they put on some kind of coffee table and pointed at a wall, and the performance was pretty poor. So that is nowhere near the case now. You can, we distribute Epson, for example, and okay, whilst it might still be classed as expensive for some, there's, you know, sort of between the £1,000 and £3,000 point can get you an incredible performance. To get a really bright, crisp image that performs well, you know, things like the awards show that, you know, what we would call a mid-range projector at a couple of grand, two and a half, you can actually get a picture that blows people away. So, you know, the other end of the scale, it starts moving up to get true native 4K. You're talking £5,000 upwards. So I think, again, one of the things we do is we're very strong in our training, and it's helping retailers and therefore consumers understand the difference between the price points. Because there's no point just spending more money for the sake of it. You have to understand what the benefits are at a given price point. But you can now get projectors for the home that will outperform what your average cinema has when you go and see it, with all those popcorn and crisp packets rattling and the fire escape signs and those people on the phone behind you. You know, people are much more willing to invest more heavily in a dedicated space now.
The one thing that I've always found that was quite a barrier to home cinema when you're thinking of a general home cinema or a home theatre experience was being able to get people to experience it before purchase. Mm-hmm. Now, you supply to a lot of retailers and custom installers. How do they demo it to customers to get them to understand the genuine benefits to a home cinema setup, say, instead of a TV and a soundbar?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the thing we've worked incredibly hard with our brands to provide training, first of all. So at a retail level for the wider market, but also for the custom installers. The demo is everything. There's very few people that would be willing to spend out the price of a small car, let alone a premium car, without at least going to see it and kick the tires and probably drive it around the block. And there's no reason why we should expect consumers to do the same with their entertainment space. The terms we talk about these things now, if you are just going to buy a TV and a soundbar, you can probably do it from reviews and do a lot of research, but you still really want to go and see it if you can. When you're investing in something like a home cinema, be it a media room or a dedicated space, you really want to experience it. Customers are buying the experience. They're not buying a model number and a review and a box. They have to understand what they're investing in. People probably know the difference between a Hyundai and a BMW and a Kia, and, you know, at the top end, the Ferraris and the Porsche. You can't often, you know, most people can't explain that difference when you're talking about home cinema. What's the difference between a £1,500 solution and a £5,000, a £25,000, and even a £100,000, £150,000 solution? So we've worked hard to, first of all, give the training to retailers, integrators about what the differences in the technology give you. But now you will find there's at least 100 major retailers around the UK that have got dedicated demo rooms where you could go and hear and experience what a home cinema gives you. For ourselves, we actually set up a whole demo facility at our HQ in Epsom, which is for the trade to use, but they can bring end users by appointment. And we've actually got a whole show apartment and two dedicated cinema rooms. One's a 25K room, the other's a 150K room, depending on how you want to slice it. But we're also comparing that to a straightforward TV on a wall with a 5.1 system in our apartment as well. So it's a very important part.
I suppose my final question is mainly about the audio side of home cinema, which is sometimes overlooked. Funny enough, people always ask us about what the pitch quality of something is, but they rarely ever ask us about the audio quality. Do you think that the massive explosion of Dolby Atmos soundbars is somewhat diminishing the sales of genuine home cinema separates?
I think this is the age-old question. You know, when supermarkets started selling DVD players with bundles of 10 DVDs for 100 quid, you know, the actual DVD player was pretty rubbish, but it got people, it got the exposure for those that product and technology. And a lot of those people went on to buy, if I might say, proper equipment later on, because they started to see the benefits, but were perhaps disappointed with what they had. I think it's important for people to realize that companies license technology because they are ultimately commercial bodies that need to make money, invest in future technologies. There is always going to be a difference in any market between the budget end, the mid and the premium. So I don't think it stops people buying a proper home cinema or a proper discrete surround amp and speaker package. I think what it might do is give people the impression they have Dolby Atmos when they don't actually have the experience. What they have is the technology and the license with some kind of, technology that represents better than something less, but it's certainly not what we would call home cinema.
And finally, for you, do you think is the future of home cinema?
Wow, that's a big one, isn't it? it's the experience. I'm not going to name one technology because this is all about the experience. People pay to go to the cinema to get a better experience than they may have in their home. People pay for a home cinema or a media room or whatever equipment they can put in their home to get as close as they can to that or even better it, because it's actually possible to get a better experience at home than it is in a commercial cinema, because you're bringing it, if you have the budget, of course, you're doing it in your own space for one person, not 300 people. So whatever that next stage brings, I mean, I'm gobsmacked every time we see, the new projectors, the new TVs, and it moves it on again. That isn't going to stop. You know, until we're sitting in a room and it really feels like real life, that whole experience is just going to keep getting better year on year. And people are wanting to escape from, what's been a pretty torrid few years, and circling back to your starting point, people are investing in their homes, and entertainment and home cinema is much higher up that agenda now. And I think I'll just finally add to say, these are nothing to do, it's not even necessarily home cinema now, these are family entertainment spaces, and that's where the value is coming in with the multi-purpose use of the rooms. The media room versus a home cinema room is actually more to do with the aesthetics. These are all family entertainment spaces.
Now on to our preview. After many years of effectively abandoning motion gaming, Nintendo is taking a punt on there still being significant interest in waving your arms around while playing a game. And what better way to do it than to reintroduce a much-loved classic, Wii Sports. It's for the Switch this time though, and offers several other sports to interact with, To tell us more on his experience playing a hands-on build is Max Freeman-Mills. So Max, you've tried out Switch Sports. What do you think of it?
Well, it was a little bit like travelling back in time, but in the best way possible. I hadn't realised how much I'd missed the era of Wii Sports, but the minute you start swinging a Joy-Con around in front of your Switch, you realise that, you know, as much as things have changed quite a lot and the graphical fidelity is a little bit better than it used to be, there's nothing quite like standing next to someone and, you know, trying to beat them while flailing your hands at a tennis match, or, you know, trying to gently release a bowling ball in a sports game from this series. To be honest, the thing that really struck me as I was playing was just that I was amazed it took Nintendo this long. You know, both the Wii and the Wii U got sports titles within a couple of years of launch, if not at launch. But we've had 5 years of the Switch, and it's kind of, I'm just glad it's finally arrived, basically, albeit at the end of the month.
I mean, that's the thing, is when the Switch launched, there were a few motion games, 1-2 Switch being the one that I still to this day play. But they kind of eased back on the sort of like the motion stuff, didn't they? Until now, of course, it looks like it's coming back.
Yeah, and as you say, it's pretty odd, because I think if you talk to certainly more casual gamers or one of the many sort of families that had a Wii but then didn't necessarily replace it immediately in a few years, Wii Sports is just such a universal part of the Wii experience. Everyone remembers it. Everyone loves the menu music. Everyone remembers the fun of playing against kind of, you know, older family members who might not have been able to get into games with controllers. But the kind of the rise of motion controls in the mid-noughties felt unstoppable. Obviously, the Switch has always had the motion capabilities. And as you say, 1-2 Switch was kind of a really fun way of exploring them. But it's just amazing to me that it took this long for a mainline sports entry. But yeah, it's certainly welcome. And it takes an interesting place in the series, because it's much closer to just that Wii Sports original template. Then obviously there were a couple of sequels that added quite a lot more sports. Switch Sports is playing it quite straight. You've got six to choose from. I'll list them just for people's convenience. It's bowling, tennis, badminton, volleyball, chambara, which is sword fighting, and then football. So obviously a couple of those are pretty familiar, especially bowling and tennis. Badminton really isn't a kind of game changer. You know what it's like to swing a racket. But football is certainly quite an interesting one. It's kind of a full third-person football game. It's almost like the slowest Rocket League you've ever played. it's going to be really interesting to see how people take to the different sports, I think. All I could do in the preview session, obviously, was I played through the tutorials of all the sports and then had a couple of games on each against another journalist, which admittedly is, you know, pretty much the perfect way to sample a game like this. But we couldn't play online, and online is clearly going to be quite a big part of the offering as compared to the days of the Wii, where Nintendo's online services were still, I think it's fair to say, pretty ropey. Nowadays, they're a lot better. So it'll be very interesting to see how much of a community pops up playing these games to, you know, differing levels of competitivity.
You've established that you played it more in a hands-on way. You haven't reviewed it fully yet. When's it coming out? Do we know?
Yeah, it comes out just at the end of the month, and at that point, the servers should switch on. We'll be updating our preview straight away into a full review with my kind of final thoughts on the game. But I think it's pretty safe to say that from that quite in-depth preview, I think it's pretty likely to be at least something of a hit. Especially, I think, if Nintendo can do enough of a job with the marketing to spell out to parents who might have a dim memory, even a muscle memory, of the Wii Sports days, that this is just the perfect addition to that ever-growing lineup of great family games on the Switch, you know. And it comes in a year when it's not even the only one. You know, we just had a new Kirby game that's also another example of how Nintendo just gets family games. You know, these could be entertaining for adults, but they're also completely welcoming for kids. And Switch Sports, I think, is another perfect example of how good Nintendo is at that area.
I think it's worth pointing out at this stage that anybody with a Switch Lite, you can't really play it at its maximum. Can you play it at all?
No. So that's one thing, yeah, as you say, very much worth knowing. This is a motion-only game, and there aren't actually that many of those on the Switch, but that does mean you've got no hope if you're trying to play it in handheld mode. It's just for docked mode. So you'll be using the Wiimote, the Joy-Cons indeed in your hands. And then actually also very limitedly at the moment, you will be able to strap one Joy-Con to your leg using the same exact leg strap that came with Ring Fit Adventure when that came out. It's basically just the same little accessory. Now, at the moment, when the game launches, that's only in use in one slice of the football mode. So you can play a penalty shootout game against each other, and that lets you kick your Joy-Con at it, sort of timing it to try and score a goal. It's pretty fun. We did try it out. After launch, the football game more widely will get kicking support using the leg strap. From that point, it's a little bit unclear whether other games will also get leg actions. Obviously, it doesn't fit all of them as well as it does with football. But again, that's another little twist on things. And if you've already got Ring Fit Adventure, it's a nice little bonus because you're not obligated to buy anything extra. You can just try it out with your leg strap when you get the game.
So from what you've played so far, which was your favourite sports game on the collection?
Yeah, it's a toss-up for me, and not to belittle any of the new games, but for me it's absolutely either bowling or tennis. They both tick different boxes, but...
Classics.
Yeah, exactly, just the classics. Tennis is still so fun and so accessible. You know, you can try your best at the beginning of a rally to place your shots, but I guarantee within 30 seconds you'll be panicking and just throwing the racket all over the place. And then on the other side of the scale, bowling is just... it's just so relaxing. It's so chilled, you know, it, not least because it makes you feel like a bowling god when actually if you go down the 10 pin, you know, I can say I've got no ability myself, but on Switch Sports with the benefit of aiming, it's just a lovely time playing against friends. So yeah, either of those is definitely my top pick still.
So that's it for this week's podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on your listening platform of choice. For now, I've been Rick Henderson, and I hope you'll join us again soon. Toodle pip.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.